We are back talking some week 11 NFL, and I'm here with Judah Forkang, as always. It's Ben Lindsay, and I wanted to start with Judah. You had a big weekend, not betting, tangentially related to betting in DFS, something that I've been grinding for a while too. Took down the Wildcat, Brock Purdy, Juwan Jennings, George Kittle stack. Do you want to kind of walk through the process? And obviously that's a big win. Kind of turns around the whole weekend.
Yeah, that's for sure. Turns around the whole season, I feel like. Definitely got very lucky to have taken down the Wildcat, which, for those unfamiliar, is a daily fantasy contest. You effectively have a salary cap where you need to allocate 9 players as though you're building a fantasy lineup, and the highest score of the day, not including Sunday Night Football, Thursday Night Football, Monday Night Football, the highest scoring lineup wins. And I was lucky enough to have that happen for me for a big cash. And yeah, I think you're right that it kind of pulls on many of the same ideas of tails angles and a lot of the matchup things we discussed. And it's what I find great about it is that it's its own unique market, right? So for betting, we have prices. And in DFS, we also have prices. They come in the form of a salary cap. And also you have the game theory of competing with other players. Because if everyone else is on the same guy, effectively you don't have him. Or at least there are those sorts of factors at play. So yeah, I went with the Purdy Kittle Jennings stack. We talked about Juwan Jennings as a guy who's going to step into that Brandon Ayuk role in the offense. Tampa Bay is a team as we've discussed, is a pass funnel. They're really filtering teams to pass and against the run, and I thought they were both very cheap. They've also been really bad against tight ends. Tampa Bay has, and given kind of where the tight end position is at in general, George Kittle had a lot of value relative to the other tight ends available, especially in the context of the stack. Didn't come back with a bring back, which is I guess typical strategy, where oftentimes when you stack three guys, as I did on the Niners, people say, well, if those guys are having a good day, then it's likely someone else on the other team will too. But I don't know, Tampa Bay has an extremely, first off, San Francisco could have hit without Tampa Bay, given like how good their offense is, and like they are perfectly fine scoring 40 points. And two, like Tampa Bay's touches are so dispersed that it's not necessarily going to be true that you're going to need to have a bring back on the other side. So I kind of got some leverage there by, number one, excluding Christian McCaffrey and Deebo Samuel, and also having a bring back. I can go through some of the other plays. I also wrote this up on my Substack post, but I think that kind of the main high level takeaway I have is that I personally do 99% betting. I play a daily fantasy mostly for fun. I do it almost as legacy. This is how I came into like the betting and football space. This is how I started, and I like to do it to have fun. I don't really pay attention to the lineups. Quite honestly, I have no idea when I built this lineup. I put in one lineup. Happened to have checked because I got some message about Austin Eckler, like someone with the Jaden Daniels under touchdown bet. And I was like, oh, Eckler scoring a couple touchdowns. And then I knew I had taken him. I didn't remember even the rest of my lineup. It wasn't like I remember building it, but I probably did it on like Thursday or Friday, and I'm doing a million things between then and kickoff. So it was an accident that I won, but I think the kind of thought process is very, very similar to all the things we discuss. And there's a particular application you can do in the betting market. There's also an application in the daily fantasy market. And in that way, I think maybe there's something to learn from daily fantasy. And the stuff we talk about certainly, I think, applies to other contests, not just betting in particular, even though that is, and I think should be, the focus.
A happy accident. And we're going to try to get some more happy accidents. This week with these games we're talking through. And we'll start with the Jacksonville Jaguars at the Detroit Lions. Biggest spread on the slate. And the Jaguars were able to keep it close with Minnesota. that was not because Mac Jones was playing well. That was primarily because Sam Darnold kept turning the ball over. You see a 13.5 point total or a 13.5 point favorite like Detroit is. I typically am not going to chase pass game production in those spots, just especially for a team like Detroit where they can run the ball on anyone. They want to run the ball. They're very good at running the ball. I think there's a couple really strong matchup angles, though, here that point to a specific way that Detroit's going to be able to move the ball through the air. And if you look at how Jacksonville plays, we've talked a little bit the first half of the season. They've been a pass funnel defense, right? Teams have run the ball less on them. They've run the ball on Jacksonville a little bit more in recent weeks, but they've still been better defending the run than they have the pass. Since Tyson Campbell came back in week 7, their top cornerback, they're 29th in pass defense efficiency, 14th in run defense efficiency. And if you look at how they play structurally in coverage, two primary coverage types, over 50% of their snaps are either cover one or cover two. Right, so they play a lot of man with cover one, and then when they go to zone, it's just cover two, keeping those two deep safeties. The thing with Detroit is they don't see a lot of cover two because defenses want to get numbers in the run game. They want to bring that safety down to kind of be able to stop that David Montgomery, Jahmyr Gibbs rushing attack. So Detroit ends up seeing a lot of cover three. Jacksonville doesn't really play cover three, 32nd in the league in cover three rate. So all that is kind of a long-winded way to say, I think we're going to see a lot of cover one from Jacksonville in this matchup, a lot of man coverage. And on the Detroit side, Amon-Ra St. Brown really has not produced against man coverage this year. He's kind of in that Deebo Samuel, Jaden Reed role of receivers who you're finding these soft spots over the middle of the field against zone. If you look at yards per route run against man coverage this season, Jameson Williams is up over 4.38. Amon-Ra St. Brown's at 0.78. So I think this is a spot where Jared Goff is coming off this bad 5-interception game, albeit in a win. And I think this is a kind of get right spot where he's hitting some of these big plays to Jameson Williams. Williams had a decent game last week against Houston, didn't hit on some of the downfield targets that he got. This is a spot where I think he can, and Detroit hit some of these chunk plays, and Goff and Williams both put up big numbers.
Yeah. So I guess my question would be, what do you think happens if Jacksonville doesn't kind of leave their regular coverage types? Like, is it possible Detroit just runs 40 times? This is a spot where both Gibbs and Montgomery can hit. And Jacksonville has a pretty good run defense, but as you said, I'm not sure it matters. I would like to see Taylor Decker back. And also that the run game, for the first time, actually, I was kind of shocked. And I'm going on a bit of a tangent here. But there's all, like, Bobby Slowick gets a lot of flack for all these, like, early down runs and this and that, and for good reason, and I think certainly so relative to Detroit. But Detroit was doing the exact same thing. And there was a sequence at the end of the first half where Detroit ran the ball three times, punted, gave the ball right back to Houston, scored a touchdown, which I thought was, like, absolutely infuriating. And it was like, Ben Johnson has the same tendency as Bobby Slowick does. He just does it with more success because the run game is better.
Yeah.
So obviously that matters, because it's one thing to call running plays when they're not working and running plays when they are working. It was interesting to see on the times when they're not working, Johnson didn't just, like, stop doing it, abandon the run. He did the exact same thing he always does, even though it wasn't working so well. So I thought that was, one, an interesting, I'm curious your thoughts there, and two, I certainly think that's also kind of a path for Detroit, even if I absolutely agree, like, I think it's probably most likely that they see a ton of man coverage for Williams to eat, and also Khalif Raymond, by the way,
yeah,
who has like 3.7 yards per down or something against man coverage. He's also been terrific and has been against man coverage for his whole time in Detroit.
Yeah, with Raymond, I noticed the same thing when I was looking through the numbers, and it's really just with Williams back. Like, if Williams was out, then that's when I would be on Raymond, but, like, with him back, it's just how many times is he going to be on the field? And to your point about Ben Johnson and Bobby Slowick, it's all of these guys, man. This is what they do. And Slowick's the one who's been getting flack because the Texans' run game hasn't been as good. Because the offensive line isn't as good, because the run game isn't as good, so it's more noticeable. But Ben Johnson, Shanahan, LaFleur, like, all of these guys are going to run the ball on early downs because that's the everything is built off of that, and the progressions and everything is looks the same, and then some of it's play action, some of it's the run game. So with Houston, it was we can talk about them later. I'm going to bring them up against Dallas, but I think it was like 45 yards and 25 carries or something for Mixon. But that's just what they're going to do. Like, even if it's running into a brick wall, they're going to continue to do it. So in this spot, like, yes, if Jacksonville plays cover two, Detroit's going to be able to – I mean, I think Detroit's going to be able to run on them regardless. So I don't hate, like, doing more of an onslaught same-game parlay where you have the Jameson alts in there with Montgomery and or Gibbs production in the run game, just kind of telling the story of you hit a few big plays early to Williams, you build a lead, and then you just grind the game away on the ground.
I like that one a lot.
Just to close, I like Williams alts. I like golf overs. Not as big on golf alts, just because I don't think he's going to have a ton of volume. And then, like I said, don't mind throwing in some run game stuff on the back of it. I'm probably not going to touch the spread just because 13.5 is huge. But, I mean, the Jacksonville offense with Mac Jones looked pretty brutal last week.
Yeah. Brian Flores' defenses can do that to you.
Yeah.
But I'm with you there. Not touching the spread, though I do think there are some intriguing SGP builds kind of along the same lines you outlined.
Moving on, the other kind of note there, Evan Ingram's been targeted at a super high rate since he came back. I think it kind of fits with Mac Jones probably not pushing the ball downfield a ton. And against man coverage specifically, Ingram's been good. So, like, that's a potential throw-in to anything you do there. Next game that you wanted to hit on, one of the better games of the week. We've got a couple legit games this week with Washington at Philadelphia in the 1 o'clock slate. That's the one you wanted to hit on. Eagles are 3.5-point favorites, 48.5-point total. Philly's coming off a win against Dallas where really they didn't have to do anything. Cooper Rush averaged 2.0 yards per attempt in that game. And then Washington with a kind of close nail-biting loss to the Steelers on the offsides jump by Johnny Newton to close out the game. But two of the better teams in the NFC. I think that might be the first time that has worked this season. It feels like every time teams go up there and it's like there's no shot they jump off sides, and then he did.
It was truly a special finish, and I don't know if people talk about the Tomlin voodoo or this. I'm sure you, as a Steelers fan, are familiar. I should say a Pittsburgh native. I don't want to guess any fandom, get any accusations here. But yeah, it was a special finish. Not to mention the spotting on the first down. Either way, this is a game I've had circled for a long time. Number one, because I'm going. Very excited to go there tonight at the link. But also because I have been, I guess I'm self-proclaimed here. I feel like advocating for Washington the entire season. And I think this is like a major, major test. But where I think this game is particularly interesting is if you look at how kind of the market arrives at the spread that they do. And the Eagles defense has been probably the best unit in football over the last couple months. We saw that certainly on full display against, I mean, it was Cooper Rush, but throwing for 45 yards is throwing for 45 yards. They've held all of their recent opponents way below their averages. So a lot of the pricing here, and the Eagles offense is good too, but if you kind of take how good Washington's been, which is power rated as like a top three offense, versus the Eagles, which are a top three defense, usually you can, when you're talking about teams that are like 10th best offense, 12th best defense, you can kind of take a loose average of these. Maybe you're going to weight offense a little heavier, and you're going to arrive at some spread. And that's usually kind of how matchups play out in general. But when you start to get to the like real ends of the distribution here, when we're talking about the best offense in a top three offense in football, and relatively speaking, one of the better offenses of the last bunch of years versus the best defense in football, that interaction looks very different than if we were to take two teams that were much closer to the middle of the pack. And we can kind of use, or at least what I would like to use, is a couple of frames of like, okay, how do we deal with this interaction? So first is, like, historically speaking, if we looked at kind of 95th percentile offenses, if they were to play like a 10th percentile offense, they're not really going to outperform much of like how bad the defense has been. Let's use how good they are going to be relative to how the defense has performed. So if the defense is allowing 2 points per drive, let's say I'm making up numbers, then it would really be something like 3.5 points per drive for a really bad defense. The offense is kind of already going to score at that. You're not going to score much more. You're not going to start scoring 4 or 5 points a drive. That's a crazy, crazy number. But where you really start to see value, and there's a nice curve of this, is in this sort of range of like 80th to 85th percentile and higher defenses, basically the offense just wins. The elite offense tends to really outperform how defenses have been. But that's a general relationship, and that might not apply. So I think if the Minnesota Vikings had, and they're probably not capable of it, but if they had a truly elite offense, let's say they got like a crazy easy schedule, I think it would be a lot easier for or more difficult for them to take advantage of a matchup effect, because Sam Darnold is the type of quarterback who basically, like, you need to stay within structure. Once the play breaks down, he's terrible. He's one of the worst quarterbacks under pressure. His like disruption EPA is -1. It's one of the worst in the NFL. In contrast, Jaden Daniels is the exact opposite. And this is something we've studied at PFF, of what are the traits and characteristics of a quarterback that allow you to somewhat mitigate matchup effects. That's a guy like Jaden Daniels, a guy like Lamar Jackson, who can scramble and extend plays such that no NFL defense is, number one, you can just like create on your own with your legs, which is itself an extremely difficult kind of matchup feature to game plan with. And also in the passing game, if you are extending the play, finding open receivers just by virtue of like the play going for 4 and 4.5 seconds, you're going to limit the effectiveness of a matchup. So not only do we have, I think, this general relationship of Washington being good or like offenses being good against elite defenses and generally outperforming them, we also have kind of, if we go to the more micro level, like Washington is precisely primed for this. And the Eagles are generating a ton of value from their pass rush. There's been no better quarterback in the NFL. Even with Lamar Jackson having a complete alien season against pressure this season, Jaden Daniels has probably been just slightly better, which I think shows how good he's been. I'll even just say like one anecdote, and this is, I obviously mostly wear the kind of data hat. There was one play that I was watching this Washington Pittsburgh game very closely, where Jaden Daniels processes that the screen that they called is not going to develop. And I mean, it would be incredible if he threw it away. You never see quarterbacks really do that. But he sees the play, reacts to it, and immediately just kind of like scrambles right back to the line of scrimmage and slides down. Like, that was a 200 IQ play. And like the ability to process so quickly, I think is like a perfect example of what you can see on the film that ends up trickling down, obviously, to the data as a phenomenon that I think exists, of just the remarkable ability to process, and certainly so from a rookie. All of that is to say, when you look at kind of how the market's pricing this, I don't think the Eagles' defense is going to perform like the number one defense in this matchup, because there's so much that what really is driving the play and driving the interaction is the Washington side of things. And in that, I think there's a mispricing, and it, especially so kind of when we get to the tail end of the distribution, because if your offense is like, I don't want to say likely, but if your offense is perfectly capable of scoring 31, 34, 40 points in a game, these spreads matter less, and you can certainly win with margin. And the last thing I'll say here, and this is my favorite game of the week, so I do feel like I can go on for a bit here.
keep rolling. You're grooving.
If you take like, right, we talk about football and path dependency, or game scripts, as we like to call them, that the outcome of, say, the second half does in many ways is certainly influenced by what happens in the first half, right? If a team is up by 14 and a half, you're going to go in with a different approach in the second half. The Eagles' pass protection, since Mailata went down, has been bad. They've kind of gotten away with it the last bunch of weeks. They've played in three of their last four games, they've played weak pass rushes. They've also just run the ball 12% of the time. I think this is a cool kind of proxy of understanding like the situations in which teams pass. If you look at the expected pass rate, i.e. Adjusting for context, right? Like we talked about, if you're up 14-0 in the fourth quarter, your odds of passing are going to be a lot less likely than if you were down 14-0. So adjusting for those situations, the Eagles have thrown the ball in the fewest obvious passing down situations over the last month of the season. They're still been pretty bad. They're like quick pressure generated is like 25%, which is a little bit below league average, despite bad opponents. And also they're basically like positioning themselves for the best possible pass blocking situations because they're throwing when the other team least expects it or when they're passing. So I think they're covering up a lot of their flaws. I don't think Mailata is going to be back for this game.
I think he is. He is back. Yeah, full participant each of the last three.
Full participant. I assumed they were still going to give him another week. Okay. So my case is a little bit weakened. Either way, I do think that the offensive line still has some problems. I mean, the tackles have been are great. The interior has been a bit of a struggle, and this is still a really good Washington pass rush. Jalen Hurts is also like inviting pressure, like what I call like quarterback-induced pressures, i.e., non-disruption pressures that are pressures. So the play has had a full time to develop, and then a quarterback does not get rid of the ball, but he holds on to it such that he allows pressure to come. This is what we talked about with Caleb Williams last week, that like he's just been fighting so much of this. Hurts is like right behind Williams. He's one of the worst in the league, and that's why he's seeing a ton of pressure. But all of that was to say that in a game script in which Washington's leading, and we can talk about the Eagles having been a disaster in the first quarter, and maybe that's sticky, maybe it's not, but it kind of magnifies the weaknesses of the Eagles, which is like they are going to be in a lot more of these pure pass protection sets. The Washington pass rush we've been talking about for weeks has gotten a lot better. People are finally putting some respect on Dante Fowler's name, and If the Eagles are playing in a negative game script, I think it really magnifies the weakness of this offensive line, plays to the strengths of Washington. I think this case is definitely hurt a lot by Mailata back. Fred Johnson had been a disaster, and he was left on an island and had one of the worst grades. But maybe I'm a little less bullish now, but I still think a lot of it does apply, and certainly the case for the Washington side and the Washington offense fully applies. So to recap, I like the Washington alts. You can even get something like a 9.5. I'm fine playing that. I think they have some real ceiling just how good this offense can be, and then layering on some Daniels SGPs, maybe some Eagles bringbacks. They don't do a great job against. They do a good job against tight ends. The Eagles obviously have a narrow distribution of touches on the wide receiver position. They haven't gotten into a pass volume sort of game, so I think that the general alts are a little bit underpriced. If we were to say conditional on Jalen Hurts throwing for 35 attempts, it looks very different, and I think that happens in a game script in which Washington leads. So Washington alts, Washington SGPs, even like the idea of bringing it back with the Eagles passing offense as well with Brown and Smith.
Yeah, sorry to ruin your angle with the Mailata a little bit. Not that it's off the table, but the Steelers, I think one of the things they did best against Washington was they took away Daniels rushing. He had 3 carries for 5 yards, right? And it feels like when you're watching Washington, the back-breaking thing is it's 3rd and 7, you get quick pressure, and it doesn't matter. He's 10 yards, first down, and it looks easy. And they didn't have that against Pittsburgh. Now, can Philly take that away? That's probably no. I think the Steelers might be the first team who has all season. I think my biggest concern with Washington, the Washington side and Washington alts, is I kind of like this matchup for the Philly offense. There is worry if they get down big, right? Because we've talked all year that the straight dropback stuff, when you are able to get pressure on Hurts, it's bad, and it has been bad for the whole season. But Washington plays a decent amount of man. They're top half of the league in single high. They've been worse against the run than they have against the pass. So, like, all of these things kind of line up with what Philly wants, how they want to win. They're going to be a big rushing team in terms of rush rate over expected. They're going to lean on Barkley, and then they're going to take shots to Brown and Smith outside the numbers against single high man specifically. When I was looking up some of the man stuff, A.J. Brown has 5.0 yards per out run against man coverage this season, which I thought was a mistake at first, but it's not a mistake. So, like, you hit some of those 40-yard plays to him, to Smith, and you control the game on the ground, then I can see this being a spot where maybe the over 48.5 is what I end up liking best. But I like the Washington offense side too. Like I don't think Philly's going to be able to stop them, even with as well as they've played the last couple of weeks, getting to Cooper DeJean in the lineup with how Quinyon Mitchell's playing on the outside. They've been impressive, but this is a really tough test.
Yeah. So I think that I guess could also give the counterpoint of, like, there's certainly a scenario in which the Eagles run a ton also and just like really slow the game down. They have it under their control. I think that leans itself to an unders game. You can build an SGP that way. And then obviously I think the overside is if Washington is driving the play and Philadelphia can keep up with them. I just think it's a little less likely than perhaps is priced, certainly in that game script.
Next game we wanted to hit, Cleveland Browns at the New Orleans Saints. Saints are 1.5-point favorites coming off a win against Atlanta. Cleveland's coming off their bye. 44.5-point total. And I'm going back to it. I was on the Falcons last week, -4. They outgained the Saints by over 100 yards. They had 11 more first downs than the Saints. Younghoe Koo missed a bunch of kicks. It was kind of a weird game. They lost. That does not deter me from saying that this is a Saints defense that you can attack in its current state. They are allowing 5.8 yards per carry over the last 5 weeks, highest in the NFL. The cornerbacks, we talked about it last week, they're playing a bunch of man coverage. You trade away Marshon Lattimore, Paulson Adebo's out. You're really thin at that position. And the other side of the ball that I think is probably the bigger matchup angle that has me on the Browns in this game. I like Browns money line. I don't hate Browns alts either. Is the last two defenses the Saints have faced since Carr came back from the injury are the Panthers in week 9, 24% pressure rate, lowest in the NFL. The Falcons week 10, 27% pressure rate, second lowest in the NFL. This week they play Cleveland, highest pressure rate in the NFL. Very good pass rush. And I don't think that New Orleans is going to be able to kind of control the game like they want to, running the ball and then taking selective shots to avoid straight dropback. So I think this pass rush is going to be a problem. For an offensive line that is ranked 31st out of 32 units in pass pro grade for us. So I think you could see a lot of short drives for this New Orleans offense. And that's just going to mean more time of possession for Cleveland. And I like this as the spot where you kind of bet on the Nick Chubb breakout game, first good game of the season. He's 3 weeks since he came back from injury, week 7, 8, and 9 before the bye last week. First game he came back against Cincinnati, that's a soft matchup, but it's the first game back off a major injury. It was still the Deshaun Watson Browns at that point to start the game. That's the game he got hurt. So wasn't effective. Then you get Baltimore and the Chargers in the next 2 weeks, two of the top three defenses in terms of EPA allowed per run play. So he's had some tough matchups coming back off the injury. Like I said, the Saints have been giving up a ton of yards. Nick Chubb's got 76% of the running back carries since he came back. Like, I think this is pointing to a spot where we see Chubb's first big game of the season, kind of making the assumption that he's just not as good coming off the injury, which I don't want to make that assumption. So I'll be on Chubb.
Yeah, that's also my favorite angle from this game. And I think you're also right to point out that the Saints offense, I think, looks a little bit different. Their offensive line's a disaster right now. And I think it looks a lot different going up against a Browns pass rush than it does their previous opponents. Yeah, totally with you on the Chubb there. Not much else to add.
You didn't have MVS in the DFS lineup?
No MVS in the DFS lineup. Legend, the past, the Chiefs legend, I should say. Yeah. But that was pretty shocking to see him fill the Rashid Shaheed role. Obviously not as well. No one can fill the Rashid Shaheed role as well as Rashid Shaheed. He is our king after all. But when I saw him catching a deep bomb early in that game, I was like, whoa, didn't think I'd ever see MVS scoring an NFL touchdown again. So
good for him to get back at. We were watching in the office and we saw the big touchdown, the first one, and we were all like, who is that? And then you saw, I couldn't read the name on the back of jersey, but I saw it was Long, and I'm like, that's MVS.
Yeah, it's gotta be.
Yeah, The perfect role for him, to be honest. The just the kind of condensed take runs posts and take deep shots offense. So
it is interesting how the Saints have really operated kind of like almost for those deep shots, right? Like their entire offense is centered around, and Derek Carr's great at those. He's always been a very good deep passer. That like, and it's even working with guys like MVS, or at least worked. But a little bit less likely for that to come through when you've got a Cleveland pass rush that's like 33% quick pressure rate, 9% better than the second best team.
Just to summarize, Cleveland money line for me, Chubb alts, and I don't hate throwing a Chubb touchdown on there. So it's also a Jameis revenge game. Can't forget that.
Sure is. That.
Well, moving on to another one of the better, really, really intriguing matchups this week. Baltimore Ravens at Pittsburgh Steelers. Two teams at the top of the AFC North right now. Big playoff implications. The Steelers have not played a single AFC North game yet this season, which is kind of crazy entering week 11, but got a heavy dose of them to close out the year. This is the first one. Home favorite or home dogs against Baltimore, 48.5-point total. What are you looking at in this spot?
Yeah, I think this is another really interesting spot where it's very rare, I think, that we are like in week 11 and we like really have a question of like, okay, how good is the Steelers offense? Like usually by this time we have a pretty good sense of like how good the teams are, and we're gonna get some like matchup effects here, matchup effects there, maybe some change in style that's going to affect things on the margins. But like, is Russell Wilson the quarterback who's got the fourth best EPA per play? Is this like, is it possible this is gonna be a top 7 offense in the NFL? Is it also possible that like Russell Wilson's gonna be the quarterback he'd been the last 3 years? And this is like a way overachieving offense. Like I think these are kind of the kind of questions we very rarely have in November, but I think is kind of central to this game. And I can see people, reasonable people, making the case that like, how is this line only 3 on like either direction? Which I think is quite the case. I think that Russell Wilson's play is not sustainable. I think that's kind of the key takeaway here. If you break down quarterback play. So we talked at the outset, or just said like Russell Wilson top 4 in EPA per play. Okay, but like let's actually break that down further. His production has been great, but it's a 3-game sample, and production does not necessarily always reflect the underlying results. So I wanted to kind of like break down his play relative to his previous seasons. Has he changed anything stylistically? Is anything like popping up in the data? And the answer is not really. He's taking about the same time to throw. He's not taking fewer sacks. His pressure to sack rate's the same as it's basically always been. He's actually performing a little bit worse kind of when the play breaks down. And that is a function of like his scramble rate or his scramble run rate, I should say, percentage of scrambles. And at PFF, we chart scrambles not just as the times they cross the line of scrimmage, but anytime they attempt to scramble. So that could be a sack. It could be a run. It could be a pass. His run scramble rate was like 25% for each of the last 5 years. It's 8% now. And he's actually been the worst scrambler in the NFL so far this season. And he just does not run anymore, which is I thought pretty interesting. So he's actually been worse in that aspect of the game. But if you break it down, really what it comes down to is the amount of value he is adding from his deep pass is like 2 times as good as it's ever been for Russell Wilson. So Russell Wilson is a great deep ball passer, and that shows up in the data. Like he had some of the most productive years. But right now he's averaging, anytime he throws a pass 20 yards downfield, he is averaging 1.4 points added per deep attempt. He's done it like 27 times or something. And if that were to hold, this would be the best mark in our database by like 0.2 points, which like, yeah, it's a huge, huge number. Behind Tua Tagovailoa's 2022 season, CJ Stroud 2023 season's not far behind. Those guys are at 1.2 effectively. Russell Wilson right now is at 1.4. So even if Russell Wilson is a great deep passer, and he is, this number just cannot sustain itself. Number one, because deep passing is like generally fluky. Yes, George Pickens is great. This is not the first time, though, that Russell Wilson has played with some great one-on-one guys. And he's never been close to this number. No one's ever been close to this number. So them, it might be directionally true. He might get back to kind of the 0.7 EPA per pass player that he has been in his career, whereas he was a lot less of that in Denver. Also, I just find it like particularly ironic. Courtland Sutton's got to be one of the better deep ball catchers in the NFL. Like, George Pickens might be one of the best contested catch guys, but right in the conversation is Courtland Sutton, and he was playing with Courtland Sutton for a bunch of years. I just see this as a spot where Russell Wilson's not fully back. I think there's going to be some natural volatility to the Steelers offense because they're going to take these deep shots. They're going to hit on it some of the time, but they're also going to be games when they don't hit on any deep plays, and it just falls completely flat. I'm also, I would be surprised if teams continue to play as much single coverage as Washington. Washington plays a ton of single coverage. And I think that was a lot of what was going on with Pickens. That's why I was on Pickens in the DFS lineup. But all of that is to say that even if Wilson's good, I don't think this level of play is sustainable. And like, you don't necessarily want to bet on regression in a single game. This is more a take over the course of a season. But if you look at like the market, it has to be pricing in. Like, this is a Steelers offense that has improved pretty dramatically from 3 weeks ago. That like, we've learned a lot about Wilson, and this is a good team. But I think a lot of that is matchup. I think a lot of that is positive variance. And Russell Wilson used to be able, he was not just a great deep passer, but also had an incredible ability to scramble, an incredible ability to extend plays. He does not have that anymore. He's actually a pretty bad scrambler now, that he's really, really reliant on those deep passes. He has added 0 points or expected points on non-deep passes. So I think this is an offense that's mispriced. You're going up against a Ravens team, which is an absolute house. Alex Highsmith's going to miss this game. That's a pretty brutal injury. Herbig, I think, is going to be back. I never know about, like, as we saw with Jordan Mailata and like Nico Collins last week, I never know when they activate a player from injured reserve. Like, is he actually playing? Is he not? So Herbig back would certainly be big. But as we just talked about with Jaden Daniels, everything applies to Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson has been right there as probably the 1B to Jaden Daniels in terms of his ability to handle pressure. He's done an incredible job scrambling. I think we talked about this last week. He's doing a lot less running when scrambling, a lot more passing. His efficiency has gone way up. He's taking way fewer sacks. This is a guy who can mitigate a matchup advantage, and I think that Baltimore can run on anyone. I mean, I don't know if you saw this stat of like yards before contact. It's like Derrick Henry, massive gap, everyone else, and it's just like that. This is what happens when you play with Lamar Jackson, yeah. And defenses have to respect the run. So all that is to say that I think that I said all of that is to say a lot that Baltimore, I think, is going to be able to score. I'm not sure that Pittsburgh is going to have that same kind of hero moonball Russell Wilson play. It also becomes a lot less likely in a spot where they're trailing. I don't think they're going to be able to get their ground game going. Russell Wilson still has a way below league average sack rate, and I think Baltimore can cause enough disruption. It would certainly be big for Kyle Hamilton to be in this game, but this is a Steelers team that I think is bound to regress on offense. You just cannot sustain the level, even if it's directionally true, you cannot sustain a level of 1.4 points on deep passes. And that's basically the only value that Russell Wilson's had so far this season.
So what are you on specifically? Steelers team total under, Ravens spread, Ravens alts?
I'm on Ravens spread. I think this is a Ravens alt spread, Lamar Jackson. Also, you can also, I think, play the Wilson unders. You can get to maybe some creative, like longest completion over, passing yard under. Maybe I'll hit on like one of these. If you can get Raven sack stuff, that's also something I'm on. A lot of kind of these derivative angles of like Russell Wilson's going to play like he did 2 to 3 years ago, and a lot less like the 2024 version. And in the main case, it's just the Ravens spread here.
Yeah, I'm kind of torn on this game. You look at the Steelers have done a good job against the Ravens over the last couple of years. Now, some of these games, they were playing Tyler Huntley and whoever, because Lamar was out. And then there was the game, I think it was last year, where Lamar played out of his mind. The Ravens dropped like 10 passes, and the Steelers won a close game. Generally, they've done a pretty good job limiting him on the ground. They've been able to get to him in the pocket a little bit. And we talked about it last with Daniels, and Daniels not running last week. Like, I'm curious if there's some, like, there is something to the idea that the Steelers have been practicing against Justin Fields, and the Steelers can use Justin Fields in that way to kind of simulate some things. So if they have a better plan to rush a mobile quarterback like Jaden Daniels or Lamar Jackson, but that's one part of that gives me concern on the Ravens side is kind of that past history against Baltimore. Also, I agree with you. Like, Russ can't keep being as efficient as he has on these deep throws. My question is this the week to bet on that not being the case with what we've seen from Baltimore secondary and what they've given up? Granted, against a pretty tough slate of opposing offenses, but there is I was when Wilson came in for Fields, I was kind of hesitant to be like, this is a great move for the offense. Even after week one against the Jets, where it's like he had some success on these deep passes, it's like, okay, Pickens is just playing out of his mind. Freiermuth made a diving catch down the sideline. Like, there's some of these things where it's not all on Wilson, but now we're 3 weeks in and I'm becoming moonball pilled. I'm into the ball trajectory thing as an argument, especially with a guy like Pickens who I think his superpower is his ability to adjust to the ball and his body control. Like, it's not necessarily making catches through contact, even though he's good at that, or like these true jump balls. It's like recognizing where the ball is coming and being able to adjust his body to make the catch. And I think when you put more loft on it, like Wilson has, it just gives him a better opportunity to do that. And now you work Mike Williams into the offense a little bit more. So, like, given what we've seen from Baltimore, I think that's still an area that Pittsburgh can win. Now, yes, you talked about the Courtland Sutton thing with Denver. Like, I think when Russell Wilson went to Denver, it was the let Russ cook thing. Russell Wilson went to Denver and he's like, I want to be a real quarterback, and I want to not just live off this run game and then play action and low pass volume. And it didn't work. It flamed out terribly. And now he's back in Pittsburgh under Arthur Smith, and that's the formula Arthur Smith has followed throughout his career. And Wilson's accepted it, and the offense has had success. So, like, I do think this version of Russell Wilson is the version of Russell Wilson you want. Now, is he going to keep completing passes at this clip in high-leverage situations downfield? Probably not. But I don't think this is the week I want to bet on it. I think this line at 3 is about right. And I'm just probably going to stay off of it outside of some props.
Yeah, that's all fair. And the Ravens secondary has been atrocious. I'd be curious how they do when they can't establish any run game. Which I do think plays into the Ravens matchup, but absolutely, kind of as he said starting through this game of like, this is one of those spots where we're going to question a lot. So there's a lot to learn because it is a variant game for a reason because there's a lot of uncertainty just with like how good Wilson is and how to balance how well he's played so far this season, the matchup. So certainly an interesting one, and certainly one that I think plays right into those tails.
Yeah, I'm going to be locked in, 1 o'clock slate. That's one of the better ones, and then it transitions right into this next game we're going to talk about. Kansas City Chiefs at Buffalo Bills. It seems like the last couple years this has been one of the games that gets circled every season. Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, they've come up in the playoffs a few times against each other as well recently. Bills -2.5 at home. Favored against the undefeated Kansas City Chiefs, who they find a way, whether it's a blocked 30-yard field goal or whatever it needs to be, they find a way. 46.5 point total, and I don't really have a great lean on the side. The angle I wanted to talk about was both of these defenses have been really good taking away outside receivers, and both of these offenses don't really necessarily throw outside a bunch. Right, they're throwing to Travis Kelce. DeAndre Hopkins is working in the slot a little bit. You've got Kincaid and Shakir on the other side. I don't know what the injury status is for Amari Cooper, Keon Coleman, who both missed last week. But if you look at where these defenses have given up some production, it's to the slot, to these middle-of-the-field targets. Kansas City, 833 yards allowed to slot receivers, sixth most. Buffalo, 854, fifth most. And the top slot receivers for each team in terms of routes, Travis Kelce, Khalil Shakir, Kelsey's seen a massive uptick in usage since the Rashee Rice injury. It was a 18% target rate in the first 4 weeks of the season, 28% since week five, second highest at tight end. And a lot of it is like 6A-dot. Like it's just these kind of work over the ball, find the soft spot, turn around, get 1 to 2 yards after the catch, 8 yard catch. Like that feels like every Travis Kelce catch the last couple weeks. But the volume is definitely there, and I think we could see kind of a ceiling week here against Buffalo. And then Shakir they've been running the graphic. I feel like every broadcast has been running the percentage of targets caught graphic for Khalil Shakir the last couple weeks. I've seen it multiple times. But that's the type of player he is. Like, he's efficient. Not super high target volume, but really good after the catch, and catches just about everything. So I think we're going to see these offenses kind of run through those two guys, but I'm interested how you think this goes.
Yeah, I think kind of the main angle here, you want to talk about kind of unheralded players, and that is Jalen Watson was having a unbelievable season for Kansas City. He broke his fibula or tibula in that week 7 game against the Niners. This was a guy who, by our numbers, was, I think, top 5 in both play before the catch, i.e. preventing separation, and also play at the catch point. He'd probably been the best cornerback in football by our standards. Isn't to say he's the best or projecting the best, whatever. His production had been great. He's been replaced by Nazi Johnson, who's been one of the worst cornerbacks in football by our numbers. And we talk about coverage as a weak link system. And Trent McDuffie's been terrific on the outside, though he did get beat last week by Cortland Sutton. He's not kind of immune to that. He's a great player. But going from having like elite cornerback duo to just a massive weak link who you can target all the time is a huge, huge difference. And I think that's kind of showed up in the data. This is a Chiefs pass defense that had basically been allowing negative EPA games to everyone. As you said, they've been dominant against outside receivers. When they had that duo of McDuffie and Watson, it was a lot easier to do that. And since then, they've played the Raiders, who had their best pass EPA game of the season at 0.12. That's like well above league average. They played the Bucs when the Bucs had no receivers. It was their best EPA game without Evans and Godwin at 0.17. And then last week, the Broncos had their second best game of the season passing, 0.12. Like these are pretty, I mean, like I think the Tampa Bay offense is fine. Their pass offense is certainly not in a great state right now. These are certainly not great units, and they're allowing a ton of production to them. I would be very concerned about the Chiefs pass defense. And I think that the schedule is extremely easy coming up, so I'm not sure they're going too many chances for them to really kind of be exposed, so to speak. I just don't think this is a good pass defense right now. Like, not only are they not a top 10 unit, as I think they're priced, I think they're a bottom 10 unit, which is kind of crazy considering how good they've been, but it reflects the reality of what this Watson injury has done to the secondary. These games are always crazy, right? It's almost like you can make the midwit meme of like bet on Patrick Mahomes as an underdog that like really fits in on the tails, and then it's just like the Bills are a better team, and I think there's some truth to that of just like Patrick Mahomes is an absolute alien in these spots, and we should not believe that he follows the normal rules because he is an outlier. That is like what makes him Patrick Mahomes. So there's certainly that side to it. I just think when I think about how the game plays out, and I try and kind of divorce, I put one cap on and I try and divorce who Patrick Mahomes is, and I try and just look at the data, and I say that Mahomes' sack avoidance has been way worse this year. The underlying numbers look way worse. The Chiefs have been able to sustain so much of their offense on just like staying ahead of the chains and Kareem Hunt running the ball well. This has been a Bills run defense that's been dominant over the last 6 weeks. I mean, they gave up a 60-yard play to Jonathan Taylor. And we should not discount that, and we should not like throw that out. You can't do that. But from a success rate point of view, they were great against the run there also. I think this is a terrific Bills run defense. And that's just like how the Chiefs have won this year, is by staying ahead of the chains and having this sort of success rate style offense. And I'm not sure that plays particularly well. You can also then just say like You're gonna throw that all out the window. Like, Patrick Mahomes is playing basically for the AFC number one at this point. It feels like they win this game, and with wins over the Bills and the Ravens, like, they basically have it locked up that, like, they're going to be playing like playoff Chiefs out here. And I think there's a lot of legitimacy to that. So I definitely see angles for the Bills just absolutely running over, not literally, but figuratively, i.e. winning by a lot of points, because this is a Bills team that I think is really set up to kind of expose the Chiefs pass defense. I would love to see the injury report. I think that matters. I don't know if Dalton Kincaid's going to be in. Keon Coleman's out. Amari Cooper, question mark. A lot of questions here. It's certainly where we sit on Thursday. But I would not be – I just want to put it out there now, plant my flag, that I think this is a Chiefs defense that is very, very vulnerable right now, especially against the pass.
Yeah, that's interesting. I knew Johnson was a big step down from what they've been getting from Jalen Watson. And I've been watching these games, and like you said, Tampa, Denver, able to move the ball, but I hadn't really – come to that conclusion yet, but it makes sense, right? It's a pass defense that was great to start the season, and with what they ask from their cornerbacks, like, they play a decent amount of man coverage, they're physical, they play press, they're up in guys' faces. That's not something that everyone can do well, and when you get one injury on that type of defense, it does have a significant impact. Teams can avoid one good cornerback. We see it all the time. Like, that's why Revis Island, like, that's why it's an island. Like, you don't just don't throw to him. So you might see a little bit of that with McDuffie if there's soft spots elsewhere. To your point on the Bills offense, the injury marks are my biggest concern right now. Like you said, Coleman out, Kincaid, Cooper questionable. Matt Milano's practice window open, or he got activated or something along those lines. So potentially getting him back over the back half of the year would be massive. Kind of seems doubtful that it's this week, but it's a big game, man. And I don't really have a great lean on the side. I'll probably stay away from that. 46.5, I'm kind of surprised that's not higher. Like, it's probably pricing in that these offenses haven't been the elite units we've seen the past couple of years. But this is a game where, like you said, it's playoff atmosphere, and it brings out, I would assume, it's going to bring out the best in both these quarterbacks and both these offenses, and we see some points put up here.
100%. How is this game not at 8 o'clock?
CBS protection, man. The network protections.
That's wild.
Yeah. The flexing rules, people think that you can flex games into – you can just flex any game into Sunday night, and that is not the case. Yeah. The game on Sunday night is decent, though. Chargers Bengals is a pretty –
solid. I'm excited for it. I just, like – I feel like this would be the most watched Sunday night football game ever.
Yeah. No, this is probably number one on CBS's list of do not give this away. So, yeah. No, they weren't. Los Angeles Rams at New England Patriots. A little bit of step down in excitement level for this game, but we've got some betting angles, and the money's still green. So what do you got, Judah?
That's right, and we love Drake May on this show. We've been talking about him for a long time. I think that the kind of matchup is very different for the Rams in this spot relative to last week, and the line's moved a pretty good deal since then. The Rams, they got their offensive line back. I think that was kind of one of the main angles of, like, Stafford is especially the type of guy who needs the situation to be good around him. He's not going to scramble. And I was like, okay, this offense is kind of ready to really take off. They have everyone healthy. And the Miami pass rush has been great this year. That's kind of been the one redeeming part of this defense. And they got to Stafford a lot. I don't think this is a New England defense that can replicate that. They had 9 sacks last week. We talked about the Caleb Williams stuff. They were the defense that I picked in the DFS lineup. But that was a function of Caleb Williams. And we talked about how he was holding onto the ball for an outrageous amount of time. He invited most of those pressures. And the Bears offensive line is also going through a bit of a rough stretch. It's an entirely different beast in this spot. I don't think that New England's going to have the same success they had against Miami, that Miami had against the Rams. This has been a pretty bad pressure unit. They also traded their best pass rusher away midway through the season in Josh Uche. And the Rams also, I think, are set to take advantage of a Patriots secondary. Christian Gonzalez is a pretty solid corner, but they play a ton of man coverage. I think maybe second most in the NFL behind only Detroit. And they do not have the personnel to keep up with Kupp and Nacua, who both have terrific numbers against man coverage. We talk about, like, it's one thing to have a great corner, Christian Gonzalez, but it's just like, all right, whoever Jonathan Jones is on or whoever is away from Gonzalez, like, they'll just get targeted. And they don't have anyone to cover on the New England side. We also talk about the Rams defense that has been extremely underrated, I think, over the last bunch of weeks. Jared Verse, we saw it at a couple sacks, at the fumble. He should be in the conversation in that, like, tier one, tier two of edge players in the NFL. He's there already. He's a rookie. He's absolutely dominant. He's the type of player that can completely transform your defense, and we've seen that. And their production has kind of showed this has been a top five defense over the last, like, 6 weeks of the season. And yes, I talk about Drake May all the time. He's the type of player who can mitigate a lot of the pressure. He's done a great job with that. This is still an offense that is handicapped, right? It's still not a good one, even if May can kind of overcome that situation. And it's an entirely different beast to, like, the Patriots when they're 6.5-point dogs to the Bears. It's another thing when it's 4.5 to the Rams, who are in just a completely different tier of team here. So I think the spot I'm on is just going to be I think that the Rams are going to have their way passing the ball. New England's been a bit of a pass funnel, much better against the run than the pass. I think they set up well with the single coverage. I don't think this is a pass rush that's going to get to Stafford. I love the, like, very narrow distribution of touches. The ball's going to go to Kupp and Nacua. I love building an SGP around those three guys. Stafford, Kupp, Nacua, throw in a spread there perhaps as well. One of my favorite angles of the week.
Yeah, I'm on that too. And I talked about the Rams last week. I was impressed with how the Dolphins played the Rams, and honestly with how the Rams played the Dolphins. Like, how both of those offenses didn't really get things fully rolling. But I think this is an easier test against New England. Like you said, not a ton of pass rush. You've got some guys up front there, Keon White and a few pieces, but in general have not been a great pass rush. And then on the other side, like, we can talk about the Bears' offensive line being terrible and the Saints' offensive line being terrible. The Patriots' offensive line is the worst offensive line in the league. Like, that, it just is. And May might be able to mitigate that better than Williams, but he's not going to be able to all the time. And Jared Verse has been awesome, like you said. Highest pressure rate in the league of anyone not named Aiden Hutchinson. So it's a good spot for the Rams, I think, and a game that they need to win, right? They're still in that NFC West, but it's the Cardinals have been winning. You got San Francisco there. This is a game that the Rams can't afford to drop against a clearly inferior Patriots team.
Yeah.
All right, I know we already hit three each. I'm going to close it out real quick with Monday Night Football, just because I do prep for Monday Night Football. And as I was going through that, the Dallas Cowboys, without Dak, should be in the conversation for worst team in the NFL. Like, they're probably not fully there with, like, the Giants and the Panthers of the world, but it's ugly. The defense has been really bad all season. They can't stop the run. If you just look at EPA allowed per run play, I was going back multiple years, it's the worst that we've seen in, like, 10 years. And I know the yards per carry numbers and stuff don't necessarily paint that picture, but it's very bad run defense. The interior line, defensive line's getting pushed back. The linebackers don't do a great job taking on blocks in those kind of muddy situations. The cornerbacks have been allowing separation. Both Trayvon Diggs and Kalen Carson have been towards the bottom of the league in terms of the separation numbers for us. Kalen Carson's been among the worst in the NFL. Deron Bland might be coming back, but I thought Deron Bland might be coming back the last couple weeks, so I don't really know what's going on with that foot injury. You get Micah Parsons back, but the two Texans tackles have graded pretty well. They've had their own offensive line issues, but a lot of that was Kenyon Green at left guard. He got benched. They moved Juice Scruggs from center to left guard, put Jared Patterson in at center. I think that's a better five for them. And we should, I know we said this last week, but we should get Nico Collins back this week. And through the first 4 weeks of the season, Nico Collins had 15 or 17 catches of 15 plus yards. No other receiver in the NFL had more than nine. He looked every bit of a true elite wide receiver, creeping up into that, like Jefferson, Chase, whoever else, AJ Brown, whoever else you want to throw in that tier. Getting him back it's hard to understate how big that is for the offense, and also how it helps a guy like Tank Dell, who's now not the top target and probably isn't a number one receiver on an NFL team, but still a very good, very useful player. And he bumps back down to more of a complimentary role. And then on the Dallas offense side, this offense was dysfunctional with Dak. They couldn't run the ball. The receivers couldn't create separation. Dak threw into tight windows at the highest rate in the league. We've talked about that. With Cooper Rush, it looked like it looked untenable. It looked like you can't put this offense on the field. He had 2.0 yards per attempt, 45 yards on 23 attempts or something like that. They benched him, put Trey Lance in. Maybe Kamari Lassiter misses this game with the concussion. I don't think it matters. Like, I'm on Houston -7.5. Houston alts, mixing overs in a great matchup on an offense where he's averaging like 25 carries a game in the games he's been healthy and hasn't played half a game or whatever it is. So, like, in this matchup, he should have a monster game, and the Texans should win big.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I'm kind of surprised that Trey Lance isn't starting. What do you have to lose?
Why not?
At least he can run. I don't know. You know what you're getting with Cooper Rush, and it's not good. But I think you touched on all the points there of just like, this is a Cowboys team that was dysfunctional before. What's going to change now? I also would just say, on the Nico Collins point, I think Nico Collins, coming into the season, most underrated receiver in football. I think the hot take that no one asked for is that he is more important to his team than any other wide receiver is to his team. I think Justin Jefferson's obvious is kind of the obvious answer, and there's a case to be made certainly for him. But if it's not Jefferson, I think it's Nico Collins. And he was in Houston, and a lot of kind of noise around CJ Stroud last year as what an incredible rookie he is, and the great situation and all that. And I think all that's true. But Nico Collins is terrific. He will be back this week. And I think, to your point, that just makes such a massive, massive difference to the overall efficacy of this offense.
Yeah, the vibes in Dallas are really bad. I don't know if you saw the Micah Parsons interview or whatever. Sure, he's like, Mike can go wherever he wants to go. And I'm like, well, that's not something that you typically hear a player say. So, yeah, not great. Not great. So I like Houston. And that's all we got. That's a wrap on the week. So, appreciate everyone for listening. We'll be back here next week for Judah. This is Ben Lindsay, and we'll talk to you guys later.